This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:35 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9 with me, Melissa Idris, also Ibrahim Sani and Julian Ng. Let's take a look at the biggest business news of the day, and we'll start with a look at how US markets closed overnight. Now, the S&P 500 crept closer to its record high, while the Dow was closed above 18,000 points for the first time in more than a month. No doubt, thanks to oil prices hitting $50 a barrel, and also the fact that investor confidence has been renewed, that interest rates in the US will likely stay low for the meantime.
It is actually somewhat puzzling that investors like higher oil prices, and when they see that, they go out there and buy stocks, right? So this is really counterintuitive, because oil is a kind of cost and should be bad for business if it rises up too quickly. But here you go. There is a very high correlation between oil and stock prices.
Yeah, and on top of that, while the correlation exists there, the S&P has tripled since the global financial crisis. And I think pre-crisis as well, it's above 40%. To contrast that locally, the FMKLCI has less than doubled over the same period, even before adjusting for our ringgit problems. So I guess there is a lot of performance-driven issues in Malaysia, and I think there's a strong confidence in the US.
Jules, just going back to the correlation between oil and stock prices, I mean, yes, there's a correlation. Yes, it's counterintuitive, but what makes it linked in the first place? Why is it that stocks go up when oil prices go up?
I think you have some of the biggest companies in the United States and possibly in the world that are oil related. So a lot of the earnings that come from such companies will contribute in a meaningful way to the earnings over there. Also, I think generally oil is a reflection of, I guess, investors' sentiment, and they kind of like it when oil prices go up, because it means that, like interest rate, right? And this is the thing, that there is this divergence between the view on oil and interest rates, because if interest rates go up, investors don't like that. But the rise of interest rates is actually a sign that the economy is improving, mm-hmm. just as the rise in oil prices is a sign that more people are demanding oil and that the economy is improving. But really, I think right now, this is just limited to the degree of oil contribution to the Dow Jones or the S&P 500 index.
So while the oil prices are indeed increasing, Julian, you were mentioning some of the companies that are driving it. Shell, for instance, is also in the frame right now. And of course, the news that we have here is that Shell deepens spending cuts, and they promise more savings. And I think this is something that we need to look at.
Well, Shell said that it's planning to sell off a huge chunk of its portfolio because of the increasing debt pile after its takeover of BG Group. Now, this was a $51 billion deal, and it was one of the biggest in the energy sector has seen in, I guess, a decade or so. So very interesting, because, you know, the company was initially accused of overpaying for BG amid low oil prices. But then again, you know, it was approved by investors, right?
I think the CEO, Ben van Beurden, who's Royal Dutch Shell CEO, has taken a big gamble on that. I think a big part of the market thought he was gambling. But he is saying that Shell would return to a free cash flow, positive cash flow situation when oil hits $60, and this buy of BG Group will help them significantly because there are synergies involved.
So he's staking his reputation on this.
Yeah,
on this
and he is cutting all other areas and then putting all money into this. So interesting to watch. I just want to go back to your point about the FBM KLCI performing less than double over the same period, and if you adjust for the fall in the ringgit, that performance will be even starkly lower than what we have seen in the S&P 500 over the last 5 years. And again, this really highlights to us ideas about how we can manage our investments, because when the ringgit weakens sharply, this represents a kind of very bad inflation for us, because a lot of stuff that we buy are imported, especially let's say long-term planning for children's education, right? And if you're investing a lot of your money, too much money in Malaysia itself, then that will put you in a kind of fix. And then you see that over the last 5-7 years, the S&P 500 has tripled, and that is adjusted for US dollar. Your investment has tripled. Mm. That, I guess, would raise some red flags if you have too much invested at home. And going forward, what should be your policy, right? Mm-hmm. This is something that is really difficult to think about, yeah, because we have this view that Malaysia is best.
Home bias. Yeah. It's a home country bias,
right? Yeah. But even EPF is trying to correct that bias.
You know, EPF has about 600 billion ringgit AUM. Coop, for instance, have about 120, 150 billion AUM. You know, investing for children is one thing, right? I mean, when you have 700, 800 billion ringgit invested and 80% or 90% of them is invested locally, you are eroding value in the long run.
Yeah, and the other question is also, now that the US markets have tripled over the last few years, the question then, the other really, really tough question is whether this can continue and whether you're taking this big risk in putting your money outwards, you know.
Right.
So it's not an easy decision to make.
Moving on to other news, as part of Indonesia's move to grant tax amnesty, Bank Indonesia is estimating some 560 trillion rupiah, that's about $42 billion, of undeclared income to be repatriated as a result of the reprieve. Now, this is a country where 0.2% of people own stocks. So Bank Indonesia is saying that perhaps a chunk of this is likely to be eventually spent on real estate.
Yeah, there are two issues here. Firstly, let's target the, you know, very low stock ownership, right? Because you look at, again, back to the US, the market has tripled over the last 5 years. They are struggling with GDP. So what's happening here? A lot of money, policy is driving a lot of money into financial assets without corresponding proportionate effects on growth and employment, right? They're kind of like schizophrenic over there right now. You know, Janet Yellen kind of flip-flopping on interest rates. Latest job numbers were poor. And then Indonesia is doing the same thing, but Indonesia is approaching it from a kind of investment big bang approach. They're opening a lot of industries to foreign investors, and they're giving this tax amnesty back to locals who have stashed up money abroad. There's a lot of money we're talking about, you know, 40 to 50 billion US dollars stashed abroad. And when these guys bring back their money, sometimes it may not immediately go into businesses and industries. Right, it will go into financial assets. And that's why the property stocks have rallied in Indonesia. And that is not exactly the effect that, I guess, President Jokowi wants.
Yeah, so speaking about President Jokowi and his intent, right, this is part of that big bang policy that we're seeing. And the fleshing out of that policy may not have the primary effect. But the thing with Jokowi and his financial advisors is that as long as it can prop the economy in any way possible, including property assets, and not necessarily, you know, the right asset class, if it improves on the property asset, if it improves on the financial asset, I guess that still hits the mark.
Really? I don't know. I don't know whether I agree.
I don't think so.
I don't know whether I agree with the tax amnesty in the first place. Yes, I know he wants to bring back all the 40, 50 billion dollars.
It's a lesser of two evils,
but
I guess.
But then, you know, this is a country that can't afford to miss out on tax revenue. If the money coming back is not going to flow into the economy the way that is most equitable, then is this really worth it?
Well, the very rich people are holding you at ransom on that count. And they are saying that if you don't give this amnesty, well, they're not saying it, but I guess this is what is in their heads, right? if you don't give us this amnesty, we will not bring back the money. And then that's the worst situation.
Okay,
isn't
so it's a lesser of two evils, yeah, like you said. All right.
But it's still, we have to talk about whether or not it's equitable and fair for compliant taxpayers. Believe it or not, there are compliant taxpayers in the country, right? Personal income tax is 30%, very high. And with the tax amnesties, they pay only 2 to 6%. So I mean, let's say, assuming I'm a compliant tax, let's not assume, I am a compliant taxpayer.
Have an account in Panama.
No, I don't have. Right? Okay. Maybe not yet, but not now. And I'm paying 30%. And this dude who has been skimping around tax, he will get, you know, or she will get 2 to 6%.
Yeah.
How is that equitable?
It's unfair, in a sense. But that's how the world works, I guess.
Yeah, okay. So 7:44 right now. We'll be back with more local business news shortly. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.